Welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Dr. Kirk Garrett. He is Medical Director of Christiana Care's Center for Heart and Vascular Health and the John H. Ammon Chair of Cardiology at Christiana Care. And welcome, Dr. Garrett.
Well, good morning, Laura. Good to be with you.
And of course, today we are recording via Zoom during a yellow phase, and we're going to talk about getting health care and a heart attack.
Yep, a favorite topic. Even during pandemics, we still have to manage them.
What is a heart attack?
Well, to a non-medical person, a heart attack might be any number of heart-related problems, I suppose. But to medical personnel, a heart attack means something very specific. It means that there's some problem with blood flow getting into the heart muscle and nourishing it. Now, even though the heart is a pump, it's a chamber filled with blood, the muscle that does the work of pumping that blood around doesn't get its oxygen and nutrient from the blood in the chamber. That blood that nourishes the muscle has to be delivered through a set of pipes, if you will, arteries that carry the blood where it needs to go. The notorious plaque that builds up when you have cholesterol problems or other hypertension, smoking, those things we know cause plaque to build up. That plaque is akin to the sort of crud that builds up in your pipe, blocks up the flow. And as a result of this plaque trouble, you can have difficulty nourishing the muscle. When the muscle blood supply gets cut off completely, that heart muscle can't survive. It'll die. And so heart attacks to medical personnel fundamentally means death of heart muscle. Well, you can imagine you don't want to lose any of that heart muscle. That's a pretty important thing to have. If you lose heart muscle to a large degree, you could have a heart attack that may be lethal. You might not survive it. Or you might pull through but be left really disabled by it because you've got a very greatly weakened heart pump. So our goal in managing true heart attacks is to prevent all of that misery for people.
So I'm hearing that a heart attack is not the disease, it's a symptom of a greater problem. It's the end result.
Typically, that's right. And this is why we sort of nip at people's heels to eat right, don't let your weight get out of control, exercise a bit, please don't smoke, make good food choices. All those things are the things that we know really matter. It's a little bit like distancing, hand hygiene, and face masks are simple things, but they're the things that matter in a pandemic. Similarly with heart attacks, the things that really matter are all those health bits of health advice that you hear over and over from medical personnel. They really will help you prevent a heart attack or stroke.
So what are the signs of a heart attack? What should make you go, I'm in trouble, I should go?
Well, here's the good news. The good news is the classics are pretty well known to everybody now. The crushing chest pain that might extend up into your left arm or into your neck or jaw. It might go along with shortness of breath, sweatiness, a profound sense of fatigue. I think that word has gotten out pretty well. And when you have those kind of symptoms, people are for the most part, under normal circumstances, they're ready to call for help and get help because they think something is up. Now, here's the bad news. Not everybody has those classic symptoms. And heart attacks can present in all kinds of funny ways. Just a weird sense of not being right, maybe something in the lower chest, upper belly area doesn't feel right. There may be something in your back that doesn't feel right. We know that certain people are a little more prone to having these so-called atypical presenting features. Women in particularly are, for whatever reason, less likely to have the classic crushing chest pain symptom. I had one woman whose only sign was that she felt like she had a sack of ice on her head. You know, wow. I mean, to get from that complaint to deciding it's a heart attack is not so easy for healthcare providers. That's the challenge we face.
So I've got to ask then, because we're obviously going to be talking about the emergency room, which many people rely on now for their basic health care. You've got a pandemic scaring some people away, and you have a condition that presents with so many different symptoms. What happens when somebody comes in because she had ice on her head?
Yeah, well, she knew something was wrong. And, you know, thank goodness that that person, that woman, had the presence of mind to realize that whatever this funny symptom was, it wasn't right. Something really was up, and she couldn't sort it out. That wouldn't be possible. She needed to come in and have somebody evaluate her. So what happens when somebody walks into our emergency department with a funny symptom like that? Well, we try to do a very quick whole assessment of things. All right, well, you don't have a sack of ice in your head, so we'll strike that off the possibility list. What would cause you to have such a funny symptom? And the personnel at the kind of the front line of the emergency department, they're savvy people. We don't put the newbies in that role. You know, you have to be a fairly seasoned person to be right on that very front line. So the person who hears your complaint is reading everything about you. That he or she may be looking at whether or not you're perspiring, if you look pale, if you seem weak or a little disoriented, and so forth. And then, of course, we quickly collect up information about you, not just your complaint, but vital signs like blood pressure, heart rate, things, and so forth. And if the suspicion is high enough, we will quickly get an electrocardiogram, which, as you know, is the simple tool that we've had around for, golly, going on 100 years now, that lets us see the electrical activity of your heart. That can be hugely important in identifying a heart-related trouble.
So are there, like, different types of heart attacks? And some don't even recognize the symptoms. Obviously, people are walking around. They've had a heart attack and didn't realize that they had one. So are there some that you can just, like, survive and keep going?
Well, I think there are two ways for me to answer that. The first is, are there different kinds of heart attacks in that? Are there some that are really dangerous and others that maybe you can kind of just pull through at home and be none the worse for it? Well, as you point out, Laura, yes, we've occasionally run into people and we look at their electrocardiogram and say, golly, you had a heart attack in the past. And the person may say, oh, no, not me. I've never had that. Well, in fact, they have, but it was a small enough event that, and they maybe didn't have the right symptoms that they thought it was a heart attack, and they got through it, thankfully. And then, of course, as you know well, heart attack is a leading cause of death in America, so it can go all the way to the other extreme. Now, the other way I can answer that, of course, is through the medical lens, and from when you ask that question of a doctor, the doctor is likely to say, yes, we actually have several different types of heart attacks. We have a formal classification system for them. And the reason we approach these different types of heart attacks differently is that we've learned that some require certain approaches, maybe very aggressive care, rush you off to the cath lab, for example, and others don't require that. In fact, we can get best results if we take a completely different approach. So without torturing you with those kind of medical details, I'll just say that, yes, we do have different plans of care for different kinds of heart attacks that render the best outcomes for each.
Okay, you just alluded to triage. When someone walks in, say you got a scrawny woman like me, or it's a big sweaty guy, are there types, ethnicities, race? Does that make you think this person is more likely having that heart attack?
Well, you know, we try to integrate all the facts that we can as quickly as possible when somebody's presenting in an emergency circumstance. Yes, certainly. We know that folks who are overweight, folks who have a sedentary lifestyle, who don't get regular exercise, perhaps people who smoke, sort of categorically, as a group, they're at greater risk. So naturally, if you walk in smoking a cigarette and you're overweight and you're puffing walking across the waiting room, we're thinking, okay, maybe we ought to think heart attack for that person. But as you point out, Lori, that's not going to be true of everyone. Even people without any of those classic risk factors can, sadly, still go on to have heart and vascular problems. So we don't let that blind us. We'll stay attentive to the fact that the heart is a central organ. We have to kind of clear it before we can move on to other diagnostic possibilities if a person presents with the right symptoms, regardless of what they look like or how they present.
So does heart disease even out among the population, or does race and ethnicity make a difference? Or is this a matter of the care that someone gets that determines if they are going to have that heart attack?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one that we're studying hard today at Christiana Care and, you know, throughout the Delaware Valley and, in fact, around the country. It's a tangled web. Yes, there are some genetic predispositions to vascular disease within certain racial groups, but we think that it's a complex interplay between your genetic propensity to develop a problem and the lifestyle choices that you make, and very importantly, perhaps most importantly, your ability to engage healthcare providers who can steer you through the life journey in the safest possible manner. And we know that, for example, in our black members of our community, they have some of those genetic predispositions. They may, for complex reasons, make or have few options about what life choices they can make and end up with life choices that we would not consider ideal, and also have great difficulty accessing the kind of health care that they need. So I'd like to say that one of the things that makes me proudest about being part of the Christiana Care organization is that this hospital organization, this healthcare system, is not just focused on taking care of people when they show up with a problem. Janice Nevin, our president, has made it abundantly clear that we are an organization that is no longer going to be focused on doing healthcare delivery. We are going to be an organization that delivers and sustains health. And the only way we can do that is to change the way we function as a hospital. Yes, we'll continue to take care of sick people when they need our attention, but we now see it as our obligation to engage in the community, to be proactive, not reactive, in helping address those kinds of limitations that I've just mentioned. We need to create access for people so that they have the ability to get healthcare advice and information and ongoing service that they deserve, even when it's difficult. We feel it's now our job to make that possible. We also need to assure that people have options to make good lifestyle choices. If you live in a food desert in some part of town where you can't access healthy food choice, you can't make good food choices, it's not that you want to live on cheeseburgers maybe, but that's what is available to you. Well, we see it now as our role to engage in the community to help facilitate solutions for those problems. And I have to say that's really an exciting thing about being part of this organization.
Well, we are going to be talking prevention in just a little bit, but if you are just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. Today we're talking to Dr. Kirk Garrett. He is Medical Director of Christiana Care Center for Heart and Vascular Health, and he is the John H. Hammond Chair of Cardiology at Christiana Care. For more information, go to ChristianaCare.org. That's ChristianaCare.org. And Dr. Garrett, we're going to talk about prevention a little bit later on, but when we go to your website, will we find tips and information about heart health and vascular health there?
Of course. Of course. We're as I said, we're ever more focused on that aspect. Yes, the ChristianaCare.org website will provide you links to healthcare information that is useful and reliable. We spend a lot of energy and resource making sure that the information we post up there is best available and fully vetted. We try to avoid the fake news trap. So you won't find information about the latest fad diet or the latest gizmo that somebody's trying to pitch, but you will get sound advice about how to optimize your vascular health, minimize your risk of stroke and heart attack.
So now let's go back to what you are seeing. Do you want to talk about numbers? How many people do you see? I mean, are you seeing more? Are you seeing fewer? Are they younger? Because let's face it, our lifestyles have changed so much, even over, say, the past 5 or 10 years. Don't even talk about more, longer.
Yeah. So, again, it's a good news, bad news story. The good news is relative to 10, 20, 50 years ago, we're light years ahead of where we used to be. Our parents and our grandparents, if they went into the hospital with a heart attack, their chances of coming out of the hospital at all were not that great. Back in the 1960s, about 40% of the people who had heart attacks didn't survive the hospital stay. Well, that's not true today. Today, maybe 4 or 5% will have fatal heart attacks. That's testimony not just to the advances in healthcare, but also the changes in people's habits. Certainly cigarette smoking is way down and so forth. Now, that's not to say we're off the hook, though. We continue to be busy, a lot busier than, we would love to be. We like doing the work, but we're sorry to see that it's still needed. Christiana Care, for example, is among the busiest community hospitals in the country. We have, on average, about a heart attack a day, right about 350 heart attacks a year. So that's a busy heart attack business or experience. That, of course, requires that we stay ever vigilant about best care practices so that those people who do need care for heart attacks get the very best care, even in the setting of a pandemic. So that's created some challenges for us. We responded to the pandemic by altering our processes internally to optimize protection of the healthcare workers. We wanted to make sure nobody got sick. We don't know. You come in with a heart attack. Maybe that's a part of your being infected with the COVID-19 germ. So we set those safeguards up in place, but that allowed us to continue to provide best-in-class care to every patient with a heart attack, even through into this pandemic period. I would note, though, that we did see an interesting and frankly worrisome thing back in March and April. We saw a reduction in the number of people coming into our emergency room for all purposes, but including care for very serious problems like heart attacks and stroke. During the worst weeks of that, the numbers were down by about a third. And over the entire period, down by about 20% or so, a little more. Well, that was all during a time when people were being furloughed from work, being forced to isolate at home, greatly disrupted life flow. Those things are all contributors to great stress. So we were quite worried that at a time when we would expect perhaps an increase in the number of heart attacks because of the stress, we were seeing fewer people come to the emergency room. We thought, boy, I hope people are not trying to just ride it out at home because they're afraid to come to the hospital. Well, we now have evidence through science, research, and survey instruments that, in fact, that was exactly what was happening. The folks were staying home because they were afraid. They were more afraid of getting COVID-19 than of enduring the consequences of a heart attack. So part of our work in the past month has been getting the message out that the hospital is, yes, a place where COVID-19 patients are kept, but they're kept in their own area where, the germs are all contained. We're good at that. We've been doing infection control for a century. We know how to do that, and we've done that perfectly. We've also done all the usual things that you see elsewhere in the community with social distancing and frequent contact disinfecting and masking, gloving, and so forth. And Laura, all of that has created a very, very safe environment for people. So any of your listeners who are still worried about the hospitals being dangerous to go to, it's not a dangerous place. It's safer than your supermarket or your hair salon. And please, if you're having a problem, we really want to take care of you. And time is important, so don't delay.
So the Heart and Stroke Association is always telling us that time is vital, obviously. And so time is heart muscle.
So Laura, we refer to the first hour from onset of heart attack symptom as the golden hour. And the reason that's the golden hour is if we can get to you during that period of time and open the blockage in the heart artery, restore normal blood flow, your chances of walking away clean with literally no serious consequence from that at all are very, very high. The longer the delay, the less likely we'll be able to help. And in fact, if you wait long enough, you'll arrive and it'll be too late. We won't be able to help you. So what we've done is we've set up systems both inside the hospital and outside the hospital in partnership with the emergency medical services teams to try to fast track all of that work. When a person calls for help, we want to get them cared for as fast as we can. We have, for example, partnered with the Newcastle County EMS and also Chester County EMS to arrange processes of transport of patients from their homes, not just to our emergency room, but right past our emergency room into the heart lab, into the cardiac cath lab, to minimize any delay and any unnecessary minutes. By doing this, we've not only been able to expedite their movement from home into our facility, but into the part of the facility where they really need to be. In most cases, that's the heart lab, the cardiac catheterization laboratory. By bypassing the emergency room, when it's appropriate to do so, we can shave as much as 15 or 20 minutes off of that episode of care. And, well, in thinking about that golden hour now, that may make the difference between our being in or outside of that golden hour.
People are going to be listening to this all over the Delaware Valley. And so if someone is hearing this and they are having symptoms, do you go to the closest emergency room or do you head for a specific hospital?
Right. Well, the patient is always in charge now, mind you, so people can make choices. But the recommendation is that if you are having a serious health problem, you should go to the nearest facility that can offer you the full service that you require. Now, that's where it gets a little nuanced and complicated, because the hospital that's closest to you may not be able to offer you all of the services you need if you're having a heart attack or a stroke. So bypassing one hospital in order to get to a hospital that has comprehensive care services for the problem you've got is not just a great idea, but it's recommended by agencies like the American Heart Association and the heart and vascular societies like the Society for Cardiovascular Angiography and Intervention, which focuses on the cath lab practices to treat heart attacks. That is, in fact, why we partnered with people like Bob Hotchkiss in Chester County and the leaders here in the Newcastle County EMS services to have a dialogue around how we can manage patients best, even if they're coming from, you know, relatively far away. If we can give them the best service, you know, that they can access and we can do it quickly, well, we're eager to offer that.
Well, what about, well, should you take yourself or should you call 911? Should you use an emergency vehicle, an ambulance to get to the hospital?
Yeah, I think in most cases, 911 is the way to go. The worst choice is to buckle up and drive yourself to the hospital. You know, too many bad things can happen unexpectedly there, and a bad situation may become a horrible situation quickly. Now, if you're close to the hospital, you have a family member there who can drive you very quickly in and safely. That may be a reasonable option. Many people choose that option. But the safe move is to call for emergency medical services. They know what they're doing. And God forbid, if something happens en route to the hospital, the right people are there to help make sure you get through that safely.
Well, of course, the best plan is to avoid that heart attack. So in our remaining 5 minutes, let's talk about your prevention efforts. So like we know the classic symptoms, we do know the classic lines. You already alluded to them. Lose weight, exercise, don't smoke. And you're obviously getting into the community and working with them.
That's right. And so the old tired song that we've been singing over and over, and I suppose people are tired of hearing it, we continue to sing, and we sing it loudly and proudly because, as I said before, it matters. I mean, it seems like such a silly thing. The old get your 10,000 steps in a day, I'm telling you it's like magic. And I'll let you in on a secret. It doesn't have to be 10,000 steps. Just getting off the sofa and incorporating a little bit of activity every day to the degree you're comfortable doing will matter. It will make a difference. But you're right. We now know that's not sufficient. And as I mentioned before, we as an organization have made a commitment to take that extra step now, to get out into the community and help. Now, of course, it's beyond the means of a hospital to correct all the problems that need to get addressed. But we're willing to partner. We're willing to be a strong arm in that activity. And so we're out actively engaging the community agencies that have a commitment to that, to those sorts of ills and issues, and we want to do our part in fixing them.
So let's talk about your blood pressure ambassadors, and I know that you are shifting them. You're getting them more into the community as well now.
Yes, we are changing the blood pressure ambassador program, and it's a good example of how we're evolving to meet the needs of the community. The Blood Pressure Ambassador Program was something set up some years back, and it was an effort to engage the community in an awareness campaign. You know, we have a lot of people running around, have bad blood pressure problems, they don't know. Or if they know, they think, okay, I'm taking my pill, I'm good, but they may or may not be checking up on it as well as they ought to, and they may not be well controlled. And so our Blood Pressure Ambassador Program sought the help of community volunteers, some medical people, nurses and the like, and some lay people, just folks who were interested and committed. We taught them how to do proper blood pressure measuring and then distributed them out to events in community centers, churches, parks, and they would simply set up a stand, offer people free blood pressure measurements. If their measures, their numbers were not right, then they would advise them to seek help and get advice and underscore the importance of that. That was very effective. We touched over 10,000 lives in the course of the years that we ran the program, and it was highly successful. We knew, though, that a campaign of heightening awareness was just the first step. What we really needed to do was to be more proactive in coupling up those people with blood pressure problems with health care. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the country, some interesting programs were being tested in which folks who were trained in taking proper blood pressures, blood pressure measurements, were placed in barbershops, largely black-owned barbershops. They would then offer people an opportunity to get their blood pressure measured. If they had a problem, they would either give them a prescription for medication on the spot or direct them and help them actively engage a healthcare provider who could address their blood pressure trouble. This has been proven now to be effective in managing blood pressure, particularly in black communities. We are evolving away from the Blood Pressure Ambassador Community Awareness Program into a barbershop blood pressure care program being managed by Leroy Hicks and our Value Institute at Christiana Care. The Center for Heart and Vascular Health is incredibly proud of this activity and incredibly pleased to have the opportunity to partner around it.
Parting words?
Well, I guess I would leave your listeners and your viewers with the following. Heart and vascular disease has not gone into isolation during the pandemic. If you have trouble and you think you're suffering from a serious problem, time matters greatly. Please don't delay. Don't hesitate. We can care for you safely and we can care for you completely. The second thing I'd say is all those things that we've talked about for decades that can help you avoid a heart attack or a stroke, they still apply. So please take it to heart. This is a great moment. We're all changing the way we live, and the change that is in our community is driving self-inspection. Think about what you can do, what positive changes you can make. Don't wait for New Year's. And the third thing I would say is you're going to see in your community changes made as a result not just of our heightened awareness of the needs of the black community, but the partnership that is taking place between organizations like Christiana Care and other community agencies. You will see positive change. I would ask people to please watch for that and to be willing to help with it when they're able.
Words to live by. Thank you. And of course, my guest today, Dr. Kirk Garrett, Medical Director of Christiana Care Center for Heart and Vascular Health and the John H. Ammon Chair of Cardiology at Christiana Care, ChristianaCare.org. A shout out as well to the American Heart Association while we're at it, heart.org. But for more information about everything that we talked about, and again, for those tips and for more information, ChristianaCare.org. Thank you, Dr. Garrett.
It's been a real pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely anytime. You are always welcome back here. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.